Chapter 18. General Kazim sat in a leather executive chair at the end of a conference table, flanked by two of Mali's cabinet ministers and his military chief of staff. At first glance, the modern paintings on the silk-covered walls and the thick carpet gave the meeting room the look of a posh office in a modern building. The only giveaway was the curved ceiling and the muffled sound of the jet engines. The elegantly furnished Airbus Industry A300 was only one of several gifts Yves Massard had presented to Kazim in return for allowing the Frenchman industrialist to conduct his vast operations in Mali without wasting time on such trifling details as government laws and restrictions. Whatever Massard wanted, Kazim gave, so long as the general's foreign bank accounts became fat and he was kept in expensive toys. Besides acting as a private means of transportation for the general and his cronies, the Airbus was electronically fitted out as a military communications command center, mostly to divert any accusations of corruption from the small but vocal opposition party members of President Tahir's parliament. Kazim listened silently while his chief of staff, Colonel Sagir Chaik, explained in detail the reports of the destruction of the Benin gunboats and helicopter. He then passed Kazim two photographs taken of the superyacht on her passage up the river from the sea. "In the first photo," Chaik pointed out, "the yacht is flying the French tricolor, but since entering our country she is sailing under a pirate flag." "What nonsense is this?" demanded Kazim. "We don't know," Chaik confessed. "The French ambassador swears the boat is unknown to his government and is not documented under French ownership. As to the pirate flag, it is an enigma." "You must know where the boat came from." "Our intelligence sources have been unable to trace its manufacturer or the country of origin. Its lines and style are unfamiliar to the major boatyards in America and Europe."
"Japanese or Chinese, perhaps," suggested Mali's foreign minister, Messaoud Djerma.
Chaik pulled the hairs of his wedge-shaped beard and adjusted his tinted designer glasses. "Our agents have also canvassed boat builders in Japan, Hong Kong, and Taiwan who design premier yachts with speeds exceeding 50 kilometers an hour. None had any record or knowledge of such a boat."
"You have no information about this intrusion at all?" Kazim asked unbelievingly.
"Nothing." Chaik held up his hands. "It's as though Allah dropped her from the heavens."
"An innocent-looking yacht that changes flags like a woman changes dresses sails up the Niger River," Kazim snarled coldly, "destroys half the Benin Navy and its commanding admiral, calmly enters our water without bothering to stop for customs and immigration inspection, and you sit there and tell me my intelligence network can't identify the nationality of the builder or the owner?"
"I'm sorry, my general," said Chaik nervously. His myopic eyes avoided Kazim's icy stare. "Perhaps if I had been permitted to send an agent on board at the dock in Niamey."
"It cost enough as it was to bribe Niger officials to look the other way when the boat docked for refueling. The last thing I needed was a bumbling agent causing an incident."
"Have they replied to radio contact?" asked Djerma.
Chaik shook his head.
"Our warnings have gone unanswered. They have ignored all communications."
"What in Allah's sacred name do they want?" questioned Senigashi.
The chief of Kazim's military council looked far more like a camel trader than a soldier.
"What is their mission?"
"It seems the mystery is beyond my intelligence people's mentality to solve," said Kazim irritably.
"Now that it's entered our territory," said Foreign Minister Djerma, "why not merely board and take possession?"
"Admiral Matabu tried it, and now he lies at the bottom of the river."
"The boat is armed with missile launchers," Chaik pointed out. "Highly effective, judging from the results."
"Surely we have the necessary firepower."
"The crew and their boat are trapped on the Niger with nowhere to go," interrupted Kazim. "There is no turning back and running 1,000 kilometers to the sea. They must realize any attempt to flee will be cause for our fighter aircraft and land artillery to destroy them. We wait and watch. And when they run out of fuel, their only hope of survival will be to surrender. Then our questions will be answered."
"Can we safely assume the crew will be persuaded to reveal their mission?" inquired Djerma.
"Yes, yes," Chaik quickly answered, "and much more."
The co-pilot stepped from the cockpit and snapped to attention.
"We have the boat in visual sight, sir."
"So, at last we can see this enigma for ourselves," said Kazim. "Tell the pilot to give us a good view." The weariness of the punishing grind and the disappointment of not pinpointing the actual source of the toxin had dulled Pitt's vigilance. His usually sharp powers of perception lagged, and his mind sidetracked any vision of the steel pincers that were slowly snapping shut on the Calliope. It was Giordino who heard the distant whine of jet engines, looked up, and saw it first. An aircraft flying less than 200 meters above the river, running lights blinking in the blue dusk. It visibly swelled into a large passenger jet with Malian national colors striped along the side of its fuselage. Two or three fighters as escorts would have been enough. This plane was surrounded by 20. It seemed at first the pilot intended to fly straight down the river and buzz the Calliope, but 2 kilometers away it banked and began to circle, drawing closer in a slow spiral. The fighter escort spun off upward and launched into a series of figure eights overhead. When the jet, Pitt by now had spotted the huge radar dome on the nose and recognized it as a command center aircraft, came within 100 meters, faces could be distinguished through the ports staring down, taking in every detail of the super yacht. Pitt exhaled a long, silent sigh and waved. Then he made a theatrical bow. "Step right up, folks, and see the pirate ship with its merry band of river rats. Enjoy the show, but do not damage the merchandise. You could get hurt." Ain't it the truth? Crouched on the ladder to the engine room, poised to leap at his missile launcher, Giordino stared warily at the circling plane. "If he so much as waggles his wings, I'll divide, demolish, and disperse him." Gunn leisurely sat in a deck chair and doffed his cap at the aerial spectators. "Unless you have a method for making us invisible, I suggest we humor them. It's one thing to be an underdog, but it's quite another to be easy pickings." "We're overmatched, all right," Pitt said, shaking off any trace of weariness. "Nothing we do will make any difference. They've got enough firepower to blow the Calliope into toothpicks." Gunn scanned the low banks of the river and the barren landscapes beyond. "No use in grounding on shore and making a run for it. The countryside is wide open. We couldn't get 50 meters. "So, what do we do?" asked Giordino. "Surrender and take our chances," Gunn offered lamely. "Even chased rats slash and run," said Pitt. "I'm for the last defiant gesture. A wasted gesture, maybe, but what the hell? We give them a nasty sign with our fists, shove the throttles to the wall, and run like hell. If they get downright belligerent, we make cemetery fodder out of them." "More likely they'll do it to us," complained Giordino. "You really mean that?" Gunn demanded incredulously. "Not on your life," Pitt said emphatically. "Mrs. Pitt's boy has no death wish. I'm gambling Kazim wants this boat so bad he paid off Niger officials to let it pass into Mali so he could grab it. If I win, he won't want even the slightest scratch or dent in the hull." "You're putting all your eggs in the wrong basket," argued Gunn. "Shoot down one plane and you'll stir up a hornet's nest. Kazim will send everything he's got after us." "I certainly hope so." "You're talking like a crazy man," said Giordino suspiciously. "The contamination data," Pitt said patiently. "That's why we're here, remember?" "We don't have to be reminded," said Gunn, beginning to see a slip of light in Pitt's seeming loss of reality. "So what's boiling in your evil cauldron of a brain?" "As much as I hate to ruin a beautiful and perfectly good boat, a diversion may be the only way one of us can escape and carry the results of our operation out of Africa and into the hands of Sandecker and Chapman." "There's method to his madness after all," Giordino admitted. "Keep talking." "Nothing complicated," explained Pitt. "In another hour it will be dark. We reverse course and get as close to Gao as we can before Kazim gets tired of the game. Rudy goes over the side and swims for shore. Then you and I start the fireworks show and take off downriver like a Vestal virgin chased by barbarian hordes." "That gunboat might have something to say about that, don't you think?" Gunn reminded him. "A mere trifle. If my timing is on key, we'll flash past the Malian Navy before they know we've come and gone." Giordino peered over his sunglasses. "Sounds remotely possible. Once the good times roll, the Malian's attention won't be focused on a body in the water." "Why me?" Gunn demanded. "Why not one of you?" "Because you're the best qualified," Pitt justified. "You're sly, cunning, and slippery. If anyone can grease their way into the airport at Gao and onto an airplane out of the country, it's you. You're also the only bona fide chemist among us. That alone entitles you to lay bare the toxic substance and its entry point into the river. We could make a run for our embassy in the capital city of Bamako. Fat chance. Bamako is 600 kilometers away. Dirk makes good sense, Giordino agreed. His gray matter and mine put together couldn't give you the formula for bathroom soap.
I'll not run out and allow the two of you to sacrifice your lives for me, Gunn insisted.
Don't talk stupid, Giordino said stonily. You know damn well Dirk and I don't have a mutual suicide pact. He turned to Pitt.
Do we?
Perish the thought, Pitt said loftily. After we cover Rudy's getaway, we fix the Calliope so Kazim never enjoys its luxury. After that, we abandon ship ourselves and then mount a safari across the desert to discover the true source of the toxin.
We what?
Giordino looked aghast.
A safari?
You have an incredible knack for simplicity, said Gunn.
Across the desert, Giordino mumbled.
A little hike never hurt anybody, Pitt said with a jovial air.
I was wrong, Giordino moaned. He wants us to self-destruct.
Self-destruct, Pitt repeated. My friend, you just said the magic words.